Hey everyone, welcome to Office Hours with Cloud Posse, your weekly dose of insider DevOps trends, AWS news, and Terraform insights, all sourced from our SweetOps community, plus a live Q&A you can't find anywhere else. It's April 24th, 2024. I'm your host, Eric Osterman. Real quick, I'm the founder and CEO of Cloud Posse. We are a DevOps accelerator for funded startups and enterprises that helps teams who are overwhelmed with AWS. And we do this by leveraging our over 200 Terraform modules that have been battle tested and downloaded over 100 million times. So no matter where you find yourself on this journey, we are here to help your startup launch better products faster so you can free up your bandwidth for innovation and nail your value delivery every time. So if you've been banging your head against the wall with underperforming infrastructure, just head over to cloudposse.com/quiz, answer a few quick questions, and we'll plot a roadmap for success free. So how can you maximize today's session? First off, our format is very informal. Engage as much as you'd like, ask questions, and if you're curious about any of our open source tools or modules, go for it. For those on the recording, we host these calls live, so don't miss out. Join us by going to cloudposse.com/officehours. Again, cloudposse.com/officehours. So I do have one ask. If you find any portion of today's session valuable, share it with your team. Just head over to youtube.com/cloudposse to find the video posted there in a few hours. So with that said, let's jump into announcements. Cue Matt.
Almost. There we go.
All right. So let's see here. Gonna just take a look at the first one here. Let's take a look at the HashiCorp announces Infra Cloud.
Yeah. And then... Can you still see that or?
Yeah, hold on.
Yeah. Okay, cool.
Yeah, so this is an exercise in branding. It's an announcement that doesn't really add much. It's not a new product or anything. I think they're basically rebranding or repositioning HCP HashiCorp Cloud as their infrastructure cloud. My guess is they've caught themselves saying so many times, well, in explaining what is the HashiCorp cloud, well, it's this cloud that you use to provision infrastructure. So maybe we should just call it that. I don't know. That's me reading between the lines. Matt, any opinion on this one?
Yeah, the only thing that that I found was interesting is it doesn't really. I'm confused where the hosted offerings for like Vault and Nomad and all of those things go. Do they go on this infrastructure cloud or is that like a separate cloud
right.
that they have, quote unquote? Like, I'm not sure that they clarified.
My take on it was that is what this is, but yeah, maybe I'm misunderstanding it as well.
That's like the umbrella, and then now it's not called Terraform Cloud anymore. It's called HCP Terraform. That's what
really?
They say, like in this thing. Yeah, I think. Yeah, see, as part of this announcement, we're bringing Terraform to HCP, and Terraform Cloud is now HCP Terraform.
Which is HashiCorp Cloud Platform Terraform, HCP Terraform.
Right.
You know, maybe what they're doing is this is kind of like AWS, Amazon Web Services, AWS S3, AWS RDS. So now it's HCP Terraform, HCP Vault. Okay,
Vault,
so that
HCP,
makes sense.
Whatever, yeah.
Yeah.
But I mean, then I don't understand.
Coming
I don't
from
understand the branding of the infrastructure cloud. Sorry.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, some disconnect now between HashiCorp Cloud Platform, HCP, and the infrastructure cloud. Yeah. You see, they really want to go for ICP, Infrastructure Cloud Platform, so they can steal Insane Cloud Posse, ICP from Cloud Posse, as they have done with Dax. That's actually what's going on here. No, joking.
Not to be confused with Insane Clown Posse.
Exactly.
Clowns that rap. Exactly. I didn't quite understand this branding, but I guess it is what it is.
Anyone else have insights on this one? Seen the announcement? All right, next one. It feels like we've re-announced this many, many times. The back-end state encryption for OpenTofu has been in progress for a long time. The significance now is that beta 1 just dropped this week. Release of this is imminent. This means that you can encrypt at rest using a variety of mechanisms your Terraform state itself. This is an additional precaution over just like encryption that you would get in an S3 bucket, because it actually prohibits a tampering of the state file itself. It supports, bring your own key, as well as you can use KMS. And what's interesting about that is your bucket can now be shared amongst a lot of teams for read and write, but that doesn't give them access to actually read the state. And you can separately encrypt the Terraform state with a KMS key and control access to the Terraform state using KMS keys. There was recently an exploit, if you will, that showed how Terraform's state can be manipulated to actually provision resources that were never in the plan, in the Terraform code itself. And that's because it doesn't actually reconcile what's in the Terraform state file with what is in the HCL code itself. So this is just another way to thwart that kind of attack. And this is a major differentiator that OpenTofu is going with to start increasing the value that they provide to make it a transition or a switch more obvious. Anything else to add to this? All right. Let's move on to the...
I will point out that if you're using this and then want to switch back to actual Terraform, good luck.
This is a one-way move. This is a non-reversible decision. And even changing your keys, if you scroll down through here, even changing your keys is a pretty non-reversible decision. They have this concept of fallbacks. So if your keys change or things like that, I believe you don't remove your previous key. You transition it to a fallback and then you add your new key, primary key. I didn't quite understand why that's the case, though, if someone could explain that to me.
It doesn't, when you switch your key in the configuration, it doesn't automatically decrypt and re-encrypt with the new key. So if you don't have both keys active, you can encrypt new data with the new key, but you won't be able to decrypt the old data with the new key. So you need the fallback key for basically to be able to decrypt that old data.
That sounds like a non-obvious gotcha that I wonder if was caught right away in the implementation.
Just one thing to add, I don't know if it's really a one-way street, this encryption thing, because, if you can decrypt it, you can, decrypt the state file and then have Terraform read it, presumably. I do remember there was it a plugin, or I can't remember if it was a provider for SOPs. So that was the same idea. You can encrypt your Terraform state locally with SOPs, and then it would decrypt it. It was something like that. It's been a couple of years since I've used this. But I wouldn't be surprised if the same thing could be done here as well to automate the process. It'll be interesting to see.
Yeah, I wonder if there's the concept of like a fallback, or like you could add the encrypted backend and then switch it to unencrypted, and then by rerunning it, it would decrypt the state and leave it decrypted. That'd be interesting if there's a way to do that.
I don't know if you can see my screen, Eric, but that's what I just pointed to in the doc.
Rolling, it's too small on my phone here. I can't see it,
sorry,
but that's what it shows.
Rolling back encryption.
Okay, really cool. So, pretty mature solution. Very cool.
Yeah, you have to basically like roll back the encryption, I guess, and then you could migrate off of it, I guess, at that point. But then Once that's done, I think then you would have to go through and like pull out all these encryption blocks, because those wouldn't be like, those won't be compatible with Fidelity Terraform, going forward. So.
Yeah, precisely.
Yeah. So.
All right. Next announcement.
IBM nearing deal to acquire HashiCorp. Oops, I clicked the wrong thing.
Yeah, that's probably the biggest announcement that we have for the week. If you've been on LinkedIn or X, you've probably seen a lot of these posts and commentary floating around. We talked recently about who would be the suitor of HashiCorp or to acquire HashiCorp if something like this were to come through. I forget if IBM was one of the ones that came up, but yeah, that
that's
was
what
one
I
you said. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah, yeah. I thought it was something
because I
like
said.
That.
They're the only one that made sense because they don't really own a cloud.
Yeah.
I mean, they sort of do with who do they own? Part DigitalOcean, right? Or someone like that. I forget. But anyway, they weren't one of the big three cloud providers, was my point, which is why they made the most sense to me. But we'll see.
So this is interesting. The amount of press around this almost makes it sound like they want it to be out there. I'm not sure if it means that also the deal has progressed beyond certain milestones. But I think it's really exciting because of the commentary I've read that, most of HashiCorp's revenue comes from either professional services or HashiCorp Vault. And it's probably professional services around Vault was one of the comments that I'd seen. And if that's true, and it would make sense. That seems like where the strategic opportunity is for IBM in this situation. It would also explain why OpenBow, is largely backed by IBM. So at least that was what the rumor mill was that I understood. So if that's the case, does IBM have a strong incentive to continue this war, if you will, with OpenTofu and other potential forks, and instead maybe just focus their attention on Vault if they acquire it, and maybe return Terraform to MPL.
I have a different theory that if really what they wanted this for Vault, it's very likely that they would then just donate Terraform to the Linux Foundation, say, you guys take this over. It's, it's not really our thing anymore. If really there isn't much revenue coming from it, but I don't know the answer to that.
Well,
but.
Yeah, so that was actually going to be my next point. So this really brings back memories of kind of what happened with Joyent and Node.js and the fork IOJS. And ultimately reached agreement and they converged again. And I think it would be a really happy or sunshine story if that's what happens with Terraform and OpenTofu.
Yeah. Although, ask Red Hat about how they liked being acquired by IBM and see what we think. Because that whole community feels like that was the worst thing that ever happened to Red Hat Linux. So, I don't know. So we'll see.
Well, right. So, yeah, I mean, one outcome is exactly what we described up front. First, that, they get acquired and they kind of jettison Terraform, bring back some goodwill, focus on Vault, move on. The other scenario that you mentioned is, they absolutely don't decide to do that. They double down on this current movement, and this protracted battle between Terraform and OpenTofu continues. And
and if that happens, not to get too far down the road, but IBM has much deeper pockets and a much longer history of brutally litigating things against competitors. It would be interesting if things turn that way. So hopefully not.
Yeah. And as Roy says, thank God it wasn't Broadcom. That would have also been an interesting one from a negative perspective. Broadcom has been jacking up the costs for VMware for their most entrenched customers, and is not very popular right now.
Yeah. I'd be very interested to see what the size of this deal is too.
Yeah. Apparently, HashiCorp's stock jumped by 20 or 25% or something when
Yeah.
word of this started spreading.
Yeah, I mean the market cap of the company is about 6 billion or something, of HashiCorp is about 6 billion. But
Yeah.
that doesn't mean you can just go buy the company for 6 billion unless every single shareholder agreed to sell it to you at today's market prices, right? So presumably they have to offer some markup on that to entice the
Yes.
shareholders to say, yes, I'd be fine. Not to mention that the hugest shareholders are venture firms that are looking for much larger returns. So this deal doesn't seem like it's a simple slam dunk deal. But we'll see, I guess. We'll see how it all turns out. And I'll be
Interesting.
really, really interested in the final number if it happens. So.
Wouldn't you think that the venture companies, though, are maybe trying to grease the wheels on this? I think this is their best option for an a lucrative exit in the next few years, if anything's going to happen. Like, if not IBM, then who? You know, and is
Yeah.
the infrastructure cloud the rescue?
I mean, yes, but not at the risk of or not at today's share prices, I guess. Like
Yeah.
if the venture firms were okay with selling at today's share prices, they would have been just slowly trickling shares into the open marketplace over the last several months to try to get rid of some of their positions. They're looking for probably a significant, a significant uptake on what the current share price is now. So,
Yeah. All right, next announcement. Or any other commentary on this one? All right. I was poking around looking at Go Releaser and I discovered NFPM and I was curious. It had 2,000 stars and it's another, way of packaging standard Debian RPM packages. So FPM is a reference to the tried and true tool to create basically packages for a single tool to create packages for most major operating systems and so forth. But it is, I believe, in Ruby or Python or something and requires a lot of dependencies. I'm familiar with it because we use it at Cloud Posse for our Cloud Posse slash packages repository. That's how we build the packages for a lot of different operating systems. Now, NFPM looks like a newer take on that with less dependencies. So I'm curious to try it out. If anyone else has used it before, would like to know.
Yeah, and it's written in Go, right?
Yeah, exactly. So
Yeah.
very easy just to get started, just a single binary.
Yeah, and you don't need Ruby and tar and gzip and all of that, at the proper versions, and it has, because it has libraries for all that built into Go to do all that stuff. Yeah, so a simple zero dependency alternative to FPM. So seems like a pretty cool idea.
Yeah.
And they've been steadily growing
That's a pretty linear
star
growth.
users. Yeah. So
All right, that was that. Next announcement was Slack rolls out AI features to all of its customers, except for I can't figure out how to do it or use it. I don't know. I was clicking around and trying to figure out the summaries, and I didn't see it. So I don't know. Maybe I skimmed this too high level.
Or it might be something you have to turn on for your workspace.
Oh, maybe more likely
Because
that. Yeah.
presumably you have to grant Slack access to read all of your data with AI to be able to
Yeah.
train it and generate these recaps and everything else.
I'm curious, has anyone been using this already? I guess not.
I think
All
you
right.
could
I think you have to pay $10 a month for this per user.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I'm. If you scroll to the very top, I think you might see the contact sales button. No. Yeah, I'm seeing introducing Slack AI. Let me try to.
Oh,
Man, this
it's a
is.
paid add-on. Someone posted in the Slack, or I mean the Zoom chat as well. Okay.
Looks like
Well,
it's
that's
dollars.
definitely not happening. I was so excited. Like, this would be really awesome to add to SuiteOps, but like, yeah, we're not paying, $20 a user.
But isn't Spacelift picking up the bill? Like, what if you just toggle it on, Eric?
Yeah, no, yeah, so about that.
Just joking,
Yeah, public service announcement. So Spacelift has been incredibly generous. They've sponsored our Slack community for a number of years now, I think. But even that got too expensive. So Slack hasn't changed their pricing. They did something worse. They changed how they count active users. So our bill quintupled with Slack when they made that change. So it's just cost prohibitive for anybody to sponsor that many free users. So we're still looking for ideas on how we can subsidize the investment in our Slack community and additional sponsors. If anyone knows who might be willing to subsidize, a couple $1,000for SuiteOps, that'd be really helpful. All right.
Yeah, just a quick comment on their pricing. They're charging, it looks like they're charging $10 a user per month. I noticed, I don't know if you, I think you guys are on Google Workspace as well. I noticed Gemini is $23 a month on top of your email seat. So in addition to the base plan for like Google Workspace,
Yeah.
it's 23 a month just for AI. So it seems like, yeah, there's a real AI premium on top of the existing.
It's like forget SSO tax, it's AI.tax now. And it's not like you're just paying Slack. You're paying for GitHub Copilot, you're paying for ChatGPT, you're now paying for your Slack AI. God knows, all the other systems. We're also paying for 11 labs.
That's why we should all switch to Facebook for work, and their AI is built in.
Oh yeah, free too.
Yeah, I
Yeah.
mean, look at the
That's
Slack.
interesting. I forgot that that was a thing.
Yeah.
AI, Facebook for, is anybody using Facebook
I
or
don't
has
know if
used
it's
it?
still a thing. It was a thing. I just pulled it out of the air because their AI is free.
Yeah. All
So,
right. Alex
this
posted
one, right?
something here. What is that? I'm totally handicapped here, so it's hard for me to.
Oh, so yeah, sorry. And I have like my window arranged in a weird way. Let me see if I can also open chat. There we go. Alex said, oh, sorry, that's wrong. I need to scroll down. New scientist article. Oh, it's not related to this. It's a different.
Okay. We'll bring it up towards the end, maybe.
Yeah.
The other one I wanted to bring up was an exciting one. Pull up this next link here for open source build pipeline security scanning. So Boost Security, they've been operating, at least from my perspective, a little bit in the shadows. I hadn't really heard about them too much. But they reached out to us over a year ago about a product that they've been working on. And they finally announced it here. So we're excited to bring it up. The product is called Poutine. It's a open source scanner, much like TFSec, Chekhov, or things like that that you might be familiar with Terraform. But this is doing it on your build pipelines. And I don't believe there's anything else out there that does this. So they're launching with support for GitLab pipelines and GitHub Actions. I'm not sure if they have support for SQLCI yet. They have about 15 checks or so that they support for GitHub Actions and GitHub Action workflows. And they're able to spot vulnerabilities in how those pipelines are configured. And I know this for a fact because they reached out to us about a incorrect usage of pull request target on untrusted pull requests. So I thought that was pretty cool. And it is open source, so definitely check that out. I'm sure they have more in the works coming in terms of an offering for this too.
Yeah, and it says here that they have plans to add support for CircleCI, Azure pipelines, and more. So not yet on CircleCI.
Yeah, so not yet there on CircleCI. But it is a brave new world on GitHub and GitHub Actions. We're big proponents and very bullish about it, but it is the wild, wild west. There's a million GitHub Actions out there from different vendors. There's a lot of ways you can shoot yourself in the foot. If you're using GitHub Teams and not GitHub Enterprise, your secrets are shared by anyone that has access to create a branch. So it's really for team level security and not enterprise level security. So that's what I got. Next announcement. This is one you
Slack.
shared. Yeah.
Yeah.
Matt, you want to talk about this one?
Yeah, I actually just thought this was interesting for a couple of reasons. It actually gave some of the scope of how big Slack actually is.
Right.
So they said they're running approximately 60,000 EC2 instances across 17 different regions in the world. So that's a pretty big footprint. And they were just talking about like what it took basically to get from the IDMS v1, the metadata endpoint inside the EC2 instance to migrate to IDMS v2, and everything that it took to do that across all their 60,000 instances. So I thought it was pretty interesting and walked through a good like approach for anyone that needs to do that. And I also found it interesting that they were using Terraform internally to provision a lot of this stuff. And they came, and then they also had some creative usages of creating a module to try to identify and figure out what was still using IDMS v1. And they did that with some custom Terraform module. To get that, and basically it would like terminate like an IDMS v1 instance and bring up one that was using v2, in sort of an ordered sequence. So and then eventually they created an SCP to stop the whole organization from being able to launch any instances using v1, which it's if you think about like things that seem easy to us, this is one of those like solving an easy problem for a large enterprise is not always easy. So it's a pretty good read. It talks about a lot of the technologies that we talk about here on a weekly basis. So that's all. I just figured it was an interesting thing to bring to the community.
All right, next announcement.
Oops.
Yeah, so this was one that is probably not news to anyone other than me, but I'm in a Terraform echo chamber. I thought this was interesting because if you look through the so AWS IA is an organization, a GitHub org run by Amazon, where they're publishing a lot of their infrastructure automation. That's the IA of AWS IA. And it really, well, it was put on my radar because it was their first foray into publishing official AWS Terraform modules. And that's investment has continued to grow and grow. Well, what it's dwarfed by are the number of CloudFormation modules that are in this repo. And is this a thing now in CloudFormation that will let it work in a more modular fashion and more reusable?
Yeah, I remember maybe about 5 or 6 years ago, I had at re:Invent, I had a meeting with the primary product manager for CloudFormation, and I was talking to him about a bunch of things. And one thing that he told me that absolutely shocked me was that something like 80% or north of 80% of their enterprise, what AWS considers their enterprise customers, use CloudFormation to deploy their infrastructure. So we keep seeing them making all these changes and doing all these things in CloudFormation. And those of us that are mostly in the Terraform, echo chambers always think like, we hate CloudFormation. Like, why do they keep investing in it and everything else? But when 80% of your largest customers, this is the preferred way that they're deploying infrastructure to your cloud, it makes perfect sense for them to do that. Like, make it as easy as possible for those people to deploy as much infrastructure as possible, because that's how you make money, right? Like, so like that's perfectly. And if you look at some of these modules that they've released, clearly targeting enterprises, like PS Connect integration for ServiceNow ITSM, right? I mean, that's an enterprise. Or what was the other one I saw? Like Sumo Logic log centralization. That's for people running like the Sumo Logic SIEM, like on-prem or in the cloud or whatever, like to do those things. Or Splunk Enterprise. Like it's all, those are all, maybe some exceptions, but those are all enterprise-y things that that people are using here. And I think, or Trend Micro Deep Security, another one of them. Like these are all like enterprise offerings. So the fact that they're bringing all this together, and building best practices for these things doesn't make, doesn't surprise me at all.
Yeah,
Artifactory,
it just
here's another
surprises
one.
me it's taken this long, I guess. I guess I, you know, it's
Yeah.
taken so long, I thought it would never happen. Now I want to see something similar for ECS, the ability to ship like Helm charts for ECS.
That would be interesting. But you mean in CloudFormation?
Yeah, it's not what I meant, but yeah, I was I think AWS Copilot is a perfect test bed for them to start rolling out packages for ECS and an ECS registry, if you will, of apps.
Yeah, it's interesting. They don't have CloudFormation. Although it's interesting, the one CloudFormation they have is .NET, the .NET framework ECS CI/CD pipeline in CloudFormation. But ECS Blue, Fargy, Consul Message Extension, all this stuff is all Terraform, which is kind of interesting. Yeah. So,
All right,
yeah,
next
interesting.
announcement. Yeah, this one here. This was an interesting one. So Microsoft's own GitHub repositories are being strategically used to disseminate malware, and it's pretty ingenious. And if you look at it, if you add an attachment to any GitHub comment, that attachment is associated with the repo, but there's no indication that that came from a comment, and there's no way to really vouch for the authenticity or anything else around that attachment. How has this taken so long to be exploited? Because this seems like such a like I, you know, if I was desperately hunting for some, binary or something, a kernel module or something for some bug or I was trying to fix, and I saw it on Microsoft's GitHub repo, I probably would let my guard down and just use it. So this
Yeah.
seems very dangerous.
Download this and run this script, and it will fix your problem.
Just curl bash this.
Yeah. Oops.
Oh, and it's not even for actually posted comments. It can be work for draft comments.
Oh, it even works for draft comments. Wow. That
Yeah.
makes sense since you see it in the preview mode. It has to.
Right.
Yeah. That's pretty.
And I, so obviously they're going to fix it. And I just hope they fix it because I mean, I really do appreciate how easy it is to add attachments and see previews and edit things on GitHub. But they also have to fix this. I'm hoping they don't have to cripple one thing to solve the other.
Yeah. I mean, slash comments slash files would be like an easy way to
it would help.
At least do it.
I mean,
right
the, just the fact that it's under the Microsoft namespace, though, I mean, for a lot of people, you know, if you look at all the phishing attacks, you know, they'll misspell Microsoft just to try and get you to, you know, click on that link. If it has comments files, that'll warn us technical users, but it still doesn't warn the suckers, most of the suckers yeah. they're targeting.
Yeah, unfortunately. Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, don't they have a web domain for githubusercontent.com or something?
They do have that web domain.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they maybe need to disassociate just the org and repo from the artifacts or the assets. All right. I think that was the last announcement we had on the list here. Any other announcements before we go to Q&A?
Sorry. Yeah, the one that Alex was posting. Let me see if I can. Oh, let me see. I'm trying to figure out how to open this without sharing my whole screen right now. Give me a second. I think, can I do this? Nope.
That's fine. We can't get to it.
Sorry, it's basically just an article. It's an article about that a tech-destroying solar flare could hit the Earth within 100 years.
Yeah, that's
a pretty crazy one.
Would something like that only affect the hemisphere, so to say, facing the sun, or at that moment, or would it pretty much blanket the entire Earth?
I don't know, but my guess is that if an entire like hemisphere were to collapse, it would probably have like some sort of cascading effect.
Clearly. You know. I mean, yeah.
Everything in orbit doesn't get shielded by the Earth.
True.
Say that again.
All satellites would be subject to it pretty much, except for a very small number in low Earth orbit.
Right. But is it only affecting things out in orbit, or would it also affect terrestrial stations and things?
Yeah, like electrical grids and things like that, for sure.
Yeah, it affects the grids.
Yeah.
Crazy.
It induces electricity where it's not wanted.
Mm.
And trips the main power distribution grids.
Yeah, and that's assuming that whatever surge it generates can be handled by the surge protection that they have, like everywhere along the grid. Like that could actually result in some serious like fires and things like that all along the path. That would be crazy.
All right, Q&A. Any questions we can get answered today?
Are the next, there's looks like there's a couple things on slides ahead.
Yeah, we can see questions what's there. It's probably left one. Over. I left this. This was from last week. Okay. We were talking about it a little bit in a rush at the end of last week. Ranjith, are you on the call today? Does not appear so. So yeah, we probably won't keep picking it up. But this does allude to that thing. Like, well, it was interesting. So on this topic, I was just talking to Martin, a longtime community member in SweetOps. Some of you who've been around for like 4 or 5 years in the community might remember a module called Airship, Terraform AWS Airship. And it was interesting because if you could ever think about a Terraform module as a product, this was that. And Airship was a very elaborate implementation of a Terraform module that both deployed the ECS clusters and supported Fargate, but also helped you manage deployment of your ECS tasks and the load balancers and so forth. And a lot of time went into building that module until he got totally burned out on it and didn't go anywhere. So he pops up in our community again a couple of weeks ago, and I reached out to him, really curious how he's doing and where he's been and everything. And one of the questions I had to ask him was, "Are you still working on Airship? Are you still looking at that?" And he said, "No, I don't think Terraform is the right tool for ECS anymore. I think other tools are needed." So that is kind of the same conclusions we're arriving at in some ways. I think Terraform works well for setting up the foundational pieces of ECS, but it doesn't do so well deploying the things on top of it. For the same reason that a lot of people use Terraform to deploy Kubernetes, but most people probably don't use Terraform to deploy on Kubernetes their applications. They use Helm and Helm file and Argo and Flux and Customize. They use other purpose-built tools for that. So the same is more or less true, I think, for ECS. And what is the silver bullet there, the holy grail? We haven't yet figured it out. We like a tool called Espresso. Some use a tool called ECS Deploy. Amazon has a product called AWS Copilot. And we're waiting to see which one wins.
Yeah, I personally, having used a whole bunch of them, prefer Copilot. It looks like it's the smoothest answer for me, but
Yeah,
we'll
that's,
see.
yeah. And especially if your organization isn't fully doubled down yet on Terraform or other things, and you're just looking for a quick way to get your your apps up on ECS with a Heroku-like experience, I think AWS Copilot is the answer, definitely. It gets messy when you're talking about how to get it integrated with Terraform. Someone was asking what tool I was talking about. It's called Espresso. Yeah, it's a ECS Presso.
Oops.
Yeah, it's just a play. It's just a play on words. So it's really just Espresso when you say it correctly, but misspelled.
Eric, quick question on that. Do you folks deploy the baseline ECS cluster and like everything
Yeah.
before using Terraform and then afterwards use Espresso on top? No.
Exactly. That's what we're pouring the espresso on top once all that is done. And in our model, we keep the task definition as close to the application as we can. So that gives developers most of the control there. And then we provision the task itself and a basic task definition just to get the thing running with Terraform. And then we do a deep merge between the two. Because the messy thing that you end up doing inevitably is, well, some of the stuff was provisioned by Terraform. How do we pass like the EFS file system? Or how do we pass some S3 bucket or IAM role or other things? So, well, we still pass that with Terraform, and then we do a deep merge with Espresso and deploy it. Also, Terraform is very slow when you're deploying a full ECS task. It's target load balancer groups, it's IAM roles, it's there's probably 15 or 20 resources as part of every ECS task. So it's infrastructure heavy. And that can easily take over a minute just to bump the image of a deployment. So using Espresso, it's just an instantaneous call. You're just, it just happens in a matter of seconds to update the ECS task and deploy it. Now, it might take a little while for the actual task to reconcile on AWS, but the operation is very smooth.
If you ignore EFS, is it possible to just deploy a brand new application using Espresso, like without the
Oh,
Terraform involvement?
yeah. So Espresso supports that use case as well.
Okay, cool. Just curious. Thanks.
But if you are doing that, I would first check out AWS Copilot just because that's A, managed by Amazon. It's where they're putting their investment in. But that's a little bit too high a level of operation for us to use. Espresso operates in a lower middle ground there. The other thing, go on.
Oh yeah, I imagine with Espresso, it's more Git based, so you have more IAC, whereas Copilot sounds like a UI ClickOps type of.
No, Copilot is a full on CLI. It's it's a Go CLI. It has great documentation, tons of examples. It's a modern CLI developed by Amazon in Go for deploying to ECS.
Got it. Okay. I'm a little behind. I'll have to give it a shot.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Can you see the screen? I brought it up here in the docs.
Oh, yeah.
I think. Yeah.
And I can't see fully. Is this, they also have their own microsite just for Espresso. That isn't, so you're on the main AWS site. There's also a Copilot microsite, which is just all about Copilot.
Yeah, and I wanted to point out that not only does it work with ECS, but it also works with Fargate, like ECS, Fargate, and AppRunner as well. So you can, it's basically meant for like all their containerized workloads with the exception of Kubernetes, I guess. So.
Yeah.
I forget how you get to the developer side. I think it's one of these, I don't know. I don't remember how you get to the micro site, but I can't remember the URL.
Remember the URL right now. So the other problem that you have when you use Terraform with ECS is the next thing you're going to want to do, how do I just run a task? And tasks are stateless, and Terraform only does stateful things. So Terraform doesn't have a way to run tasks. With Terraform. Espresso does, though. So with Espresso, you can just run a task in your ECS cluster, for example, to run a migration or run some kind of a maintenance job or other thing. Any other questions?
Just while we're talking about like the two different tools, I think the one thing I like about Copilot is that it actually has like built-in like patterns or like architectures or whatever. You can actually say like, I want to run like, you know, a load balanced web app, and then it will actually provision all the infrastructure to spin up a load balanced web app for you as part of that thing. Or you can say like, I want a worker, like a worker service or scheduled jobs or, you know, something along those lines. And it will provision that like properly for you under the hood, which is kind of cool.
Oh, and the website is aws.github.io/copilot-cli. I would put it in the chat here, but I'm on another device. There you go.
Yeah, that's it, right? Yeah.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, oh, architectures, that's what they're called, not patterns. Yeah,
oof,
so you can see here.
Not good. They just turned on the power again, and I heard a huge explosion. Probably a transformer just blew.
Oof. Hopefully it wasn't in your house.
I hope so. Could have sounded very loud.
If you think that's bad, wait for the solar flare.
Exactly.
It's gonna happen right now.
Yeah. Oh man, maybe, you know, for those of you who have kids, you probably think the same thing. It's like, oh man, they're gonna have some interesting problems in their lifetime that we don't have.
Yeah.
Well, the West Coast was supposed to crack off also, wasn't it?
It was.
Still there.
I mean, is it? So Alex actually asked another question in the chat. Let me see. It says the Appress book, continuous integration and continuous delivery states, I used to see infrastructure provisioning and application deployment as two different processes. However, this is legacy thinking. It is based upon the fact that this was often done by different departments and different people. What's the take on this? I really like to have stable infra in Terraform and the deploy buttons in GitHub Actions or wherever. Yeah, I think I would say call it legacy thinking, but I bet you in most organizations, there are two different groups of people that are still doing that for the most part.
Yeah.
I think as long as you're bolted to some compliance requirement, you're probably going to see that.
Yeah. 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 For sure. Or, you know, scale, right? Like, you know, once you get to like a large enough organization, it's just inefficient to have someone deploy everything and not end up with like some sort of shared services module, because you're going to end up with like every team's take on this. And as soon as someone switches teams, they have to relearn everything about how the organization does, you know, does development and infrastructure and dot, 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 security, compliance, monitoring, dot, 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 right? So I think that, you know, that quote comes out of the DevOps is the future, where we just we meld development and operations, and maybe like
it only gets
it works in some places. So
well, all right. this is also interesting because it brings up the point that the struggle that we have is we don't want individual application repos to actually be provisioning infrastructure, because now we have all this sprawl of application repos that literally have administrative permissions in whatever accounts they can deploy to, because that's what you need in order to really do any kind of Terraform that provisions IAM roles and so forth. So by just limiting it to the task definitions in those repos, it reduces the blast radius and the security implications. And then the infrastructure is managed separately, following all the guardrails in place for infrastructure. But in a perfect world, totally, yeah. But I don't think we're there yet.
Next year, AI will solve it. It'll do it all.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hopefully, you know, before we start launching our infrastructures by typing prompts, you know, they can figure out how to write text properly on pictures and things like that. You know, I mean,
it'll only cost you an extra $10 for each resource you want AI managed.
Yeah,
exactly. Oh man,
don't let it last longer. They'll get ideas.
Well, we are out of time for today. I do want to thank everyone for participating and sharing your insights and announcements. We'll be posting a recording of today's session to our YouTube channel. Go to youtube.com/cloudposse to subscribe, but also to download it. And if you're interested in meeting with Cloud Posse and seeing if we can move the needle for you, go to cloudposse.com/quiz. Again, cloudposse.com/quiz. Answer a few quick questions and you'll book a meeting with me directly. And if you are interested in other ways of staying engaged, we have our newsletter. Go to newsletter.cloudposse.com. It's a syndication of all the cool announcements that we have here, our Slack community, where you can meet like-minded folk, and our podcast, which is a redistribution of our weekly office hours as a audio podcast. So with that said, talk to you all next week. Take care.
Thanks, folks.
Thanks. Bye.